Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
So hello there, and welcome back to the Azure Podcast. My name is Kale Teeter. I'm a consultant working in the Azure as COE at Microsoft, and I'm based out of New York. And my focus is helping enterprises leverage Azure and some of our Azure and .NET tools to build custom solutions. And on Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleague, Evan. Evan?
This is Evan Basilek. I'm a support escalation engineer on the Azure networking support team, and I'm based out of Charlotte and kind of live in the Azure space and have for a long time. So,
yeah, and you'll notice we're missing one of our guys today, Sujit. He's off probably doing fun things. And Evan are trying to hold the fort down here.
It's always a little bit scary when you when he lets the inmates run the asylum, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, and full transparency, you know, there's not a ton of planning that go into these things. We kind of just collaborate and see what seems to be the hot topic. And tonight, it's we're going to be talking about ARM, Azure Resource Manager. And so we'll talk about some of those details. But before we get into that, there was actually a lot of news this week. One of the big ones was around containers. And blog post that we have out here from Mark Rusinovich talking about containers in general, going over why we have containers. You know, the hot topic is things like Docker and those kind of things. And so he walks through a little bit of kind of the methodology about why do we even have containers? Why are they important? Why is it a hot topic that people talk about now? And then it goes through, you know, some of the technology behind it. And then, you know, we talk about Docker, which is primarily a Linux-based solution. And something that we just announced here.
Not anymore. It's also Windows these days.
Yeah, exactly. So we can run Docker there, and then we have our own containers that we're going to run with 2016 server. And I think there was an announcement about that. So it kind of gets into some of that those details. The other stuff that's up, one of the other big ones was around the government, some more compliance milestones or certifications that we have in there. Big because, you know, it sounds like corporate America kind of thing about these certifications, but these are like super important, right? Because in order for large enterprises, in this case governments, to trust us with their data and with their services and all the different things that go around running these cloud services, these things are like crucial. Security teams at any of these enterprises and governments will probe these things, and so it's important to have these. And I don't think they should be glossed over. When I see those, I always take a look at what they're involved with and to see where they apply.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my side of the house, Kale, this stuff is really more. It creates more work for me because it means that if I'm going to support some of this stuff, there's some, you know, potentially some additional clearances and stuff that we've got to get. But I think in your role, right, in the COE, going out to work with customers and stuff, this, I mean, every given customer doesn't care about every given certification, but this is the kind of stuff that your customers think about and care about.
Yeah, and it gets to the point where sometimes it's like they'll ask about specific policies or technologies and how we do certain things with our security, and a lot of these get covered in saying we have this certification and that's how we can guarantee it. It's not just Microsoft's trust us, we got it. you know that's easy to say and say that, you know, you just, we're a large enterprise, you can trust us, Microsoft does this. No, we've had independent auditors come out here and certify this. That's what this is about. So it's crucial,
trust us, right? I mean, also trust us. So
yeah. So the other one is around backups. So there was an announcement, and I don't know much about this one, but apparently there's been some announcement of being able to use target Windows 10 machines leveraging Azure Backup. I don't know. Do you know anything about that, Evan?
Yeah, I was going to say Azure Backup, my team used to support. We transitioned it to another team. But the Azure Backup is a there's a couple different flavors of it, but the one that particular announcement about is the one that allows you to back up out of file level, I mean folders and files, so not an image backup, but at a folder and file level, backup your local data into Azure, basically an Azure Vault, right? So it's a kind of a special wrapping around Azure Blob Storage. And, you know, adding Windows 10 in there is big, right? This is our new OS. This is kind of the future. Windows as a service and having the ability to actually back your stuff up there is going to really make some people feel much, much more comfortable about moving to that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's definitely a big thing, especially around Windows 10. So I think it's pretty interesting. I'm going to have to take a little bit more look at it, but it's cool.
Yeah, Azure Backup is, if you're doing file-based backup, it's a great product for it. I mean, there's some new stuff that I can't remember if it's in GA or preview, but where they're doing, if you're running a VM in Azure, you can actually just back up the whole VM, so an image-based backup. But this is not that. But yeah, the Azure Backup is really just leveraging the scale of the cloud for storage and then providing backup solutions for that. So
cool. Yeah, we'll put a link for that. And then the last one, which kind of ties into what we were talking about last week with the App Insights, is some new stuff out of the SDK labs for App Insights. And it's a new binary. I guess you can download this from NuGet. And what it gives you is much deeper dives in. They call it dependency call stack. And basically allowing you to drill through even function calls into your code with this new library. So basically giving you a deeper level of data back from App Insights about how long each function is taking. If you have a MVC controller, how long is that thing taking to execute? So being able to identify bugs in your code, but not just bugs in your code, slow code. Why is it taking longer for this one method? Is it calling a database, and is something need to be tweaked on the query there? Those kind of things. So really interesting from App Insights perspective. I think you can even view like call stacks, and so there's a lot of deep information you can get surfaced there. But we'll put a link to that too. You can go ahead and take a look at that. And that's not something that would be like GA or whatever. This is something that's kind of experimental, I think is what they're calling it, hosted up on GitHub, so part of our open source stuff. All right, and to get to the topic of the hour this week is the ARM, Azure Resource Manager. And so I was talking with Evan earlier about this, and so we thought it'd be a great topic because I personally am getting pinged a lot about this from both customers and other people inside Microsoft who are getting up to speed with Azure. And one of the things they always ask me is, is this just around like grouping resources up there? Is that really, that's what I hear this thing's about. I don't really understand what ARM is. I've seen things in a portal that say V2. What's that all about? Should I be using V2? The other ones say classic, and that sounds bad if I'm using classic things. So, Evan, I don't know what your experience has been with people questioning about ARM.
That's exactly it. I mean, there's a lot of, I think, confusion from people about understanding what it is, why we did it, and, you know, what you should be doing about it and what you should or shouldn't do with it today, right? I don't know. I think it would probably make some sense to go through the history of, what we're doing with ARM. You want me to go ahead and share what I know about that,
sure.
Kale?
Go ahead.
Yeah, so, way back in the day, right, when Azure was first created, right, it wasn't designed. I mean, nobody knew Azure was going to be this massive thing that it was going to be. Right, it was kind of an experiment that some people did, and if you've been around, you know the original code name was Red Dog, and it's not secret. But it really wasn't built necessarily with an architectural design that allowed all the different components to be patched and maintained independently and make sure that everything's coming in through interfaces instead of, all these cross dependencies. Right? Classic problem with designing apps. Right? You build it, you build this kind of neat concept, and then all of a sudden you turn around and it's this huge thing, and now you have to re-architect because it's no longer just, this small, compact thing. So the old service management stack, there were a lot of cross dependencies and a lot of things that it was just very, very difficult to change or patch because of the relationships. So what we did was we split it into these resource providers, and there's three resource providers today. the network resource provider, the storage resource provider, and the compute resource provider. And you certainly, you know, as you can imagine, the compute resource provider leverages the network stack and the storage stack. But there's not, so there's dependencies on it, but they're not cross dependencies. Right? The code's not munged together in one class. And, you know, if you're making a change to the networking level, you're not changing the same classes that the compute stack does. And so the net benefit is, in the long run, this is going to be a much, much more scalable, more maintainable solution, ultimately one that should also provide benefit for customers. But it has required a complete re-architecting of almost everything.
Yeah, I think the thing that...
the change.
Yeah, I think the thing that I see a lot is people asking, do I have to create resource groups? Or they stumble into it the other way. So if they're using the management portal, they... let's not say the preview portal, the other portal, when they go to provision resources like a VM or an ISVM or something like that, when they go to provision that up there, then they pop into the preview portal, they see all these resource groups have been created. They're like, I didn't create these. Where did these come from?
Yeah.
So I think it's that part starts to confuse people a little bit because they're like, I didn't create these. I don't know what they're used for. Why are these here? But I think, like you said, Evan, and one of the big pain points, too, that I've heard intended to kind of alleviate, one of the things was, especially VMs. So if we said, okay, we want to write a script to spin up 10 VMs, we write that script right now. If we were using Service Management API, it's a little bit complex, right? Because if, when we do that, we start provisioning one VM, we kind of have to wait till it gets to a certain state before we can provision the next one, right?
Your time checking status and all the like.
Yeah, so it's like an async call. We check to see if it's in a specific state, and then once it is, then we can spin the other ones up. We can't just create them all at once. And I think that some of the intention with ARM is to kind of alleviate some of that too, because of the re-architecture. We'll be able to basically create those kind of things much faster. Also, obviously, the templates are huge. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit, Evan.
Yeah, I was going to say that the templates are the part that actually I think I've certainly seen some people start to leverage, and they're not for everybody, right? If you're only going to spin up a VM once, a template may not necessarily help you in all the situations. But, I mean, what I really like about them is, you know, we basically define this workload both in the VM and, you know, all the resources associated with the VM, and you can take a template that does, you know, something close to what you want, tweak it just a little bit, and then upload that template, and now you have your resources. And it's a declarative style instead of a not programmatic, it's not the word I want. I can't think of what the other side would be, but it's you're basically declaring these are my resources and these are their properties. I don't care how you build them, how you hydrate them, the order in which you hydrate them. This is what I need.
Yeah, and I think there's two things there I think that are really cool. So one is the pain points, right? So from the existing one, when I'm working with customers, a lot of times this is the ask. You know, it's like, okay, so we need to test this out, right? So a stack of machines, some of it's IaaS, some of it's PaaS. But we need to basically go build this stuff, right, and test out what we're thinking about. So proof of concept, let's make sure everything works. Anything we need to adjust with the code or whatnot. But once we get to that point, then it's like, is there any way we could just like take that now and like move that to this other place, like make another copy of that and put it over here?
Yeah, basically, right? Yeah, exactly.
And so in the past, it was a lot of scripting, to be honest. So they wanted something that they could push a button. So it was, we write PowerShell scripts, and that's not necessarily the easiest thing, right? Because figuring out all the parameters and getting everything lined up and making sure that you don't create this thing before this other thing, or actually the latter of that, making sure that X is created before you create Y, was a big thing. And so I think this too has, especially in the declarative, there's actually dependencies in there. So you can declare dependencies when you're spinning up different resources in there, and they'll go and fulfill themselves before and ARM is smart enough to know to make sure that happens.
Well, it's interesting. The part that I've kind of read about, and I honestly have not had a chance to play with, but I mean, you can even do things like looping and conditionals in the ARM definition. So ARM is, I'm not sure if this is a language structure that we've adopted, from somewhere else, or whether this is, you know, the kind of the language of the JSON templates that we have is something we've invented. But it looks incredibly powerful to the point where it's going to take a while before I think any of us really understand all the complexity and all and can leverage all that power.
Yeah, definitely. I do think, though, that it's huge. I mean, I think this is a great way for enterprises or even small businesses when they're spinning these things up to be able to generate these templates and basically keep them around so that you can do exactly what I've said. You could duplicate pieces in your environment without having a programmer or somebody who knows scripting and those kind of things to do it for you, you know.
Yeah, no, and actually, so have you seen the resources site yet, Kale?
I'm not sure which one you refer to. The one that mostly I work with from a template perspective is up on GitHub, actually. We have a big repo up.
So GitHub is great if you somebody's already published a template for you. The one that we've actually been playing around a lot on my team, because a lot of times, right, we're working with a customer says, hey, I built this thing and it's not doing what I want, or I can't get it to do it. And then the question becomes, well, you know, how did you create it? What's its properties?
Mm-hmm.
Right. In the service management days, that was not the easiest thing to go figure out. These days, what you can actually do is there's a site called Azure Resources. It's basically Arm Explorer, and it's resources.azure.com. And what you can do is you can browse through that, and you can actually see a hierarchical structure of your subscription, your deployments, and everything you do under there. And what you'll actually see is you'll see the ARM template for every resource that you have.
That's amazing, man. I didn't even know about that. That's an awesome thing, right?
Yeah, it's really great, because sometimes if you just can't figure out how to do something in ARM, do it in the portal, you know, beg, borrow, steal, right? Figure out how to do it, and then come back to this resource and here's your template. And what's really nice is and this is one of those things that I'm not a UI designer. I'm not an architect. I never would have thought of this, but once I saw it, I thought it was awesome. There's actually two things. Is one, you know, you have the ability to build the get URL for this stuff, right? So that you can either, you know, cut and paste it from here or go stick it in code somewhere. The other thing is we have a whole another section on the ability to make changes to it. You know, you can do posts and deletes to it. And then lastly, and this is kind of the protect yourself button, is that you can use this in read only or read write, right? You could actually work in this ARM Explorer instead of the portal. And the default's read only, so you can kind of see everything. But if you really wanted to get fancy and go read write, you can start deleting things. You can, you know, change things. I mean, it's really amazing what you can do here.
That's a really, really awesome tool, Evan. I didn't even know about that, so that's a great great thing out for our listeners to take a look at, especially when you're getting used to this. And, I mean, I can personally comment that the words you said were exactly things I have heard in the past. The comment I've heard in the past was, this is great that we can go into the portal and kind of build things and that kind of stuff when we're testing this out. I wish it was like SQL, where I could click that thing that says generate script every time I do something. And
yep.
So that sounds like what this is, right? So we can go to the site kind of and browse what we have up there, and that's amazing, right? So somebody getting started and doesn't understand what the template looks like, they could go look at their stuff they provisioned through the GUI and see what they want to tweak, you know?
Yeah, I'm actually just playing around with this, because there's always new tweaks that I see showing out here. Like, I just flipped mine to read-write mode, and there's an edit button that I can turn on now, and I could actually go change this resource that I'm looking at right
wow.
now. You know, so yeah, I definitely encourage people to check this out, right? I mean, we're still kind of playing with it and trying to understand what are all the things we can do with it. I will say the one thing, you know, in my role, and it's probably similar for you as well, Kale, right? I create a lot of things and then throw them away, mm-hmm. right? I'm trying to reproduce something, or I'm trying to, you know, figure out how do you actually make it work. In the old portal and in the old model, trying to get rid of those things was tough. Right? I mean, oh, is that, what's that? What's the dependency there? Well, and part of this is a resource group thing, and part of this is an ARM thing. But now, because everything's in a resource group, you can go in and say, I just want to delete that resource group. and everything is gone. So I now have moved to a world where I actually start naming my resource groups based on the, you know, the test or the dummy thing that I'm going to do. I suspect it's going to be like I have on my computer, where I must have a million files called evan.txt, right? Because it's just kind of my default for, hey, I need a quick text file for something. I'm going to have all these, you know, arm test 1, arm test 2, and I'll know that if I'm just looking at them, oh, I don't need that, delete it, right? Versus if it's a real name, then I know I can keep it.
I think that's huge, you know, because the same, I do that all the time. So somebody will ask me something about multinet. Why is this not working whenever I set up something where I have multiple virtual networks connected together? And I'll be like, I'm not 100% sure, you know, and then I end up spinning up that same exact environment and I spend time doing it. And if I did that once and had it in a template where I could just say, hang on a second, let me spin this up and then we'll see exactly what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, or even take it a little bit further, like in my role, right, in support. Hey, you know, customer calls to say, I can't get XYZ working. Really? Well, give me your template.
Yeah, that's...
And then I have exactly what they have. Not my own interpretation or not my ripped, stripped down version. It's identical in structure.
Yeah, and I think the key there is it's beyond... It's what you make it, right? So however big that container is, whatever infrastructure is inside of there, whatever resources
are inside,
it's everything. So that's pretty cool. But I think one of the big things right now, and this is, it's not a negative, but it's just the state of kind of the union, is this isn't out there for everything. So I think that's one of the things people run into is, okay, then I'm committed to ARM. But it's like, well, it's still kind of evolving, right? So a lot of the good stuff is there for VMs and those kind of things, but not everything has been ported to this new architecture, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of things that are not there. You know, it's like our portal, right? Not everything's in the portal yet. ARM is such a major re-architecture, right? It's going to take a little while to get everything in there.
I think the other thing about it is being able to version it, right? So that's another key thing I think people ask for a lot is, I've spun this thing up and it's pristine. This is the way I like it, right? This is the way I want this environment to be set up for this specific app or this group of apps. Can I kind of snapshot that? And this is great for that, right? So we could save a template off and even version it, put it in version control, and then if later we wanted to make a tweak to it, like you said, Evan, you could come in, fire it up, make your tweak, whatever, in your JSON file or whatnot, save that as a different version, or even save the one in the template or the one from the portal over.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I actually think this feels very similar to the way NuGet manages packages, right? Which is, yeah, there's this kind of underlying infrastructure to allow you to do that, but the real power is the fact that you can declaratively say, these are my packages. And then anybody that leverages that can just go get those, right? They don't have to have them up front, but you can then check all that into source control and manage it that way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, and then, so these are all great things for us, for especially when you're creating resources or kind of like Evan's been talking about, like saving kind of state of what you build up there kind of thing. But there's also other benefits, right? So the other thing that came along with this that's been long coming is kind of the RBAC model, right? So being able to create these groups and then apply RBAC on top, which is a role-based access control. So basically we can start to limit what people can see in there instead of the coarse grain stuff of like a co-admin or something like that.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, I can't tell you how many times somebody's like, let me just make you a co-admin. No, I don't know. I don't want to be a co-admin on your subscription. You know,
yeah. Yeah, and especially if you break it up by department, and it always gets into this thing of when people get their subscription, should we have multiple subscriptions? And inside that subscription, what if I just have one but because it's small, but I just want to have a couple departments in there or something, or a couple different groups? How can I make sure they don't touch other people's stuff, you know, kind of thing?
Yeah. So, no, I think this is going to be one of those things that it's going to take us a while to, you know, really kind of understand all the, you know, benefits and quirks and everything, you know, but I think I can really, like we're talking about, I mean, I can really kind of see the power that's there. We just got to go figure out how to use it.
Yep. Well, I think that's pretty good, unless you have anything else, Evan.
No, this was not bad for us winging it this week, so maybe Sajid will let us do it alone more often. You never know.
Yeah, and we'll put that link out to the resource manager link that you mentioned, Evan, along with the other stuff that we talked about, and hopefully people have a little better understanding now of of what ARM means from a high level, what it's about, and how you can leverage it.
Yeah, and I think what we probably ought to do is plan on doing another kind of revisiting of this because ARM is so new, and come back in a couple of months and then, you know, kind of share what we've seen people doing and good, bad, and the ugly.
Right? Yeah, definitely. So,
okay.
All right.
Cool. Sounds great. Thanks, Kale.
Yep, and thanks, listeners, for joining, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.